This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
There we go. Here I am. I know a lot of you are watching the Welcome to the Family doc on Hulu right now. If you're not, it's pretty good. And getting your first taste of the Adelsons. Isn't that bursting with country fresh flavor? Oh, yeah. Ooh, have seconds on that, right? What we're doing here, I'm helping you kind of break down the whole damn story. In case you're like, I got to learn more about that. Well, welcome. We're going to help you do that. We already have one video in the can, as they say, and it should already be out by the time you're watching this. This is our second in the series. This is The Dentist. This is where we're going to jump a little bit more into the dental practice and kind of explain some of the logistics of what the hell was going on with the Adelsons, the allegations, and what's been proven in a court of law as well. In as cohesive, entertaining, sometimes darkly funny, because it's horrific how stupid these people are, way that we can. I know it's a horrible thing, but you know, that sometimes we add that in to get through it. So I welcome your thoughts, like I said, in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Here is where Charlie Adelson's extortion story starts sounding less like terror and more like financing. According to Charlie, the man threatening to kill him were willing to accept monthly payments through his family's dental practice, a layaway plan, if you will. No cash dropped under a bridge. Not one desperate handoff and then silence. A payment plan. Remember Charlie? Charlie said he was bamboozled here, that he had mentioned being frustrated and that it would be a great idea to kill Dan, and he never actually ordered it. It was his girlfriend who got some people involved and they did it, and now they want to be paid, and he wasn't planning any of this. So how about a layaway plan? How about you pay us in installments through checks at the dental practice and have mom sign them? That almost sounds like Mad Libs, doesn't it? It sounds like something I was just kind of making up as I was going. No, that's exactly what happened. Charlie did not deny that money moved. He did not deny that Catherine McBonner received cash and later received checks connected to his family's dental practice. He did not deny the calls, the continued relationship, the hitman joke, or the conversation recorded at Dolce Vita. His answer was that everybody, they have the story backward. Because according to Charlie, Dan Markell's killing was not something he arranged. It was something Sigfrido Garcia and Luis Rivera carried out on their own after learning about the ugly custody fight through McBonner. Then Charlie said McBonner came to his home and told him the men wanted $1/3 million. So she's friends, you know, and she's got the baby daddy that's in the gangs down in Miami. And they're just like, whoa. That sounds like a problem for us, the superhero gang fighting villains, fighting for custody battles of rich white people villain. Oh, wait, that's not a thing. They don't just like, it's not, it's not like a side hustle where it's like, I'm going to order the products from Amway and then I'm going to sell them and then I'm going to get my commission. Like, no. This isn't like a multi-level marketing scheme for murder. They're coming to claim their rewards. But that's how Charlie was trying to pitch it. He had 48 hours to pay, or he and his family could be killed. Charlie testified that he opened his safe and handed over about $138,000. The rest would be paid in monthly installments of roughly $3,000. So yes, the defense presented jurors with what amounted to a payment plan for death. Now, before we turn that into a punchline, let's give Charlie the strongest version of his own argument. People who are terrified, do irrational things. They freeze. They hide. They decide the police will make everything worse. They stay close to dangerous people because they believe those people are also protecting them. Fear is not orderly, and it does not have to make sense to somebody sitting safely in a courtroom 9 years later. That part is fair. The problem is that fear had to explain absolutely everything. It had to explain why the people supposedly demanding immediate payment under threat of death were willing to wait month after month. It had to explain why McBona began receiving checks from the Adelson Institute about 2 months after Dan was shot. Financial investigator Mary Howell testified that there were 44 checks that Donna Adelson signed every one, and that the twice monthly payments continued until May of 2016. Apparently, the threat was urgent, but the alleged extortionists respected the dental office billing cycle. The defense got an important concession out of Hull. A bank record can show where money went, but it cannot tell a jury why. A check does not arrive stamped murder payment or extortion payment. Hull agreed that the financial records alone could not tell jurors which story was true. Fine, but they could show the system. They showed who got paid. They showed when the checks began. They showed who signed them. They showed it was not one terrified handoff in a parking lot. It became a reoccurring business arrangement running through a legitimate family practice. And that is where Charlie's explanation stopped being one frightened man's odd decision and became an entire alternate operating system. Jurors had to believe the safest way to satisfy people threatening to kill a millionaire was to put the woman carrying the threat on something that looked like payroll and let his mother handle the checks. Then the jury heard from Louis Rivera. Rivera was no choir boy arriving with clean hands and a civic duty speech. He pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and received a 19-year sentence. It runs with a federal sentence. He had every reason to cooperate, and the defense had every reason to attack him for it. Rivera testified that Garcia recruited him, that Garcia was the shooter, and that the two men traveled from South Florida to Tallahassee. According to Rivera, they followed Dan after he dropped his children at preschool, went to the gym, and returned home. Dan was then shot in his garage. He died the next day at 41 years old, leaving two young boys without their father. Rivera said the job came through McBona and that the motive involved a woman wanting her children back. He also described payment in $100 bills stapled into $100 bundles. Prosecutors presented evidence that Charlie routinely kept stapled cash the same way. Could Rivera lie? Of course. Cooperating witnesses can lie with astounding confidence when freedom is on the menu. And the prosecution was not asking jurors to admire Rivera. It was asking whether his account fit the rental car, the travel, the surveillance, the relationships, and the money. And then came McBona, the bridge between Charlie and Garcia. Her credibility problems were even larger. Her first trial ended without a unanimous verdict. Her second ended with convictions for first-degree murder, conspiracy, and solicitation. She was serving life. She admitted that she lied during her own proceedings because she was trying to save herself. That's not a footnote. That's the first thing any honest analysis is going to say about her testimony. So she comes in a little damaged, if you will. The defense argued that cooperation was her only imaginable path towards a different future. Prosecutors said she had been promised a sentence reduction, and that is exactly why jurors had to treat every word she gave rather carefully. McBona denied extorting Charlie. She testified that Charlie is the one who proposed the killing, that she recruited Garcia, and that later payments were connected to Dan's death rather than legitimate work. She described the initial cash as not only stapled, but wet. She also said she believed Charlie's parents, or possibly Donna, the allegation in the dark, bizarre story goes, is that Donna literally washed the money in a washing machine to launder it. These are the criminal masterminds we're dealing with in this case. I know. That last part was her belief. Not proven by a video of Donna at the sink giving $100 bills a delicate cycle. Although, wouldn't that be great? This is where people tend to outrun the evidence. The wet cash was testimony. The claim about who watched it was McBonough's interpretation. So it should be, it should stay that way technically, but come on. The wet cash was still one more place where the two stories collided. Charlie said he surrendered money because he was afraid. McBonough said she received money because the killing had been completed. Jurors did not need to decide that McBonough had suddenly become trustworthy in every area of life. They had to decide which account required fewer miracles. And then there was Charlie's own voice. In April of 2016, the FBI staged what became known as The Bump. An undercover agent approached Donna with material suggesting that someone connected to Rivera wanted money. Donna contacted Charlie. Charlie later met McBonough at the Dolce Vita restaurant while investigators recorded the conversation. Parts of that recording were difficult to hear. The state used enhanced audio prepared by former CIA audio forensic specialist James Keith McLevin, but Judge Stephen Everett warned jurors that the transcript was not evidence. They had to rely on what they actually heard. That's important because the recording was not a movie confession. Charlie did not sit down, order an appetizer, and announce the entire conspiracy for a microphone. Prosecutors argued that the guarded language sounded like people protecting a shared secret. The defense argued that it sounded like a man trying to understand a new extortion threat. And came the line about the airport. Charlie was recorded saying that if authorities had evidence, we would have already gone to the airport. He testified that he meant there was no evidence because he was innocent. Prosecutors heard something else, not a declaration that he would never run, but a statement that the presence of evidence, if in the right hands, might change travel plans. Could that sentence be interpreted more than one way? Sure. But jurors did not hear it floating alone in space. They heard it beside the checks, the cash, the prosecution's fake employment theory, the calls, and Charlie's refusal to contact law enforcement while claiming armed men were threatening his family. They also heard the hitman joke. Charlie admitted joking that the television he bought Wendy as a divorce gift was cheaper than hiring a hitman. He called it one of the stupidest things he had ever said and insisted it was only a joke. And one disgusting joke does not prove an agreement to kill anybody. But once Dan was killed by men connected through Charlie's former girlfriend, that joke stopped being harmless background noise. It became another fact. Charlie needed the jury to seal inside its own little container and never place next to anything else. That was the entire defense problem. Okay, let's accept the initial cash as fear, now accept the checks as fear, accept McBonough's continued access to Charlie as fear, accept the business records as a delivery system, accept the guarded calls as confession, accept the airport line as confidence, accept the hitman joke as meaningless, accept that Charlie believed McBonough was innocent for years, even though his secret account supposedly could have explained the case. Any one of those things might be possible, but all of them had to be true at once. Charlie was arrested on April 21st of 2022 after a Leon County grand jury charged him with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and solicitation to commit murder. He chose to testify at his 2023 trial, which means jurors did not have to imagine how he would explain the contradictions. They watched him do it. On November 6th of 23, after roughly 3 hours of deliberation, A jury found him guilty on all three counts. On December 12th, Judge Everett sentenced him to life without parole plus two consecutive 30-year terms. Charlie maintained his innocence. His direct appeal later focused heavily on whether years of publicity made it impossible to receive a fair trial in Leon County. It wasn't a ridiculous concern. Of 130 prospective jurors questioned, 96 had heard about the case. 54 said they had formed an opinion, and 53 of those believed Charlie was guilty. But all 54 were removed. Then the appeal ran into a problem no amount of courtroom drama could really fix: procedure. The First District Court of Appeal ruled on July 1st and 26th that the venue issue had not been properly preserved because defense counsel did not file the required written motion with supporting materials and did not renew the objection before the jury was sworn. The court also looked beyond that mistake and found no record showing that the jurors who actually served were biased. The convictions and sentences were affirmed. So yes, the paperwork hurt the appeal, but the court did not simply hide behind a technicality. It also reviewed the jury selection record and found no fundamental unfairness in the people who actually served. Charlie Adelson's extortion defense did not fail because frightened people always act logically. They do not. It failed because every piece of evidence needed its own private exception to common sense, and every exception somehow transformed a prosecution fact into proof that Charlie was the real victim. Smart people sometimes believe that complexity is the same thing as credibility, and enough detail create enough alternate explanations. Maybe somebody will notice that the entire machine is running backwards. But juries are not required to admire the engineering. One strange decision can be misunderstood. Two can be coincidence, but the whole story requires us to rename the money, reinterpret the relationships, ignore the business structure, and believe that men threatening immediate death accepted a multi-year installment agreement through a dental office. That's not just an explanation anymore. It's a bizarre sales pitch with a payment plan for murder. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. There's more to come in our series. Donna's next. Oh, Donna. We're going to dive deep into her world. And after that, Wendy. Where is she today? Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Take our podcast with you wherever you go so you can listen at work, in the car, at the gym, wherever. The QR code is there on the screen on YouTube. If you're watching us right now, just scan it and press subscribe. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get them. We'd love for you to be a regular listener. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.